future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome, welcome. This is Raging Chickens Out to Coop podcast. Yes, it is Friday, October 22nd, 2021. Having a little technical kind of stuff going on in the background. Sorry about that. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. And each week I talk to the campaign manager for Scott Perry for Prison 2022, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, and we are streaming live at our YouTube channel right now. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that bell so you know every time that we go live, and share it out to your friends, your family. Share it out to people you hate. I don't care. I just get the word out, encourage them to subscribe to our channel too as well, and make sure you get our podcast wherever you get your podcast. On today's show, yes, Biden makes a last attempt to personally lobby his friends in the Senate to pass his Build Back Better plan through reconciliation. So far, his efforts have led to a decrease in the size and scope of the bill. According to reports, Biden told progressive lawmakers that the bill is likely to be cut from $3.5 trillion to a ceiling of around $2 trillion. Recall now that the $3.5 trillion bill was the original compromise bill, down from the initial $6 trillion. So there you go. So things are going in the right direction. Is that what's happened? Is this what all that kind of camaraderie is all about? Biden also reportedly told lawmakers that free college, community college tuition will be cut, and the extension of the child care tax credit will be significantly scaled back. Hey, can you see that white flag flying from the White House? I don't know. I think I can see it from here. And Biden was in Scranton this past Wednesday to push his Build Back Better plan, but it looks like it's a whole lot of too little too late. And with Joe Manchin's threats to leave the Democratic Party, we are left with the question posed by David Dayen in the American Prospect this week. What if Build Back Better builds back worse? Good question. And jumping on that bandwagon, Will Bunch wrote this week in the Philadelphia Inquirer, right, from college to climate, Democrats are sealing their doom by selling out young voters. Yeah, that's about right. And it looks like Manchin, you know, his blocking of the climate provisions of the Build Back Better bill. Well, guess what? Climate change is going to have a disproportionately disastrous effect on the people of West Virginia, according to new reports. Yep, how's that for representation? Today is PA Focus. Doug Mastriano, this is gold right here, guys. All right. Doug Mastriano was waiting for a financial sign from God about running for governor. Yes, in other words, grift here. Mastriano has been campaigning at different churches from around the Commonwealth ahead of an anticipated run for governor. I don't even know if that's going to happen at this point. We shall see. And Pennsylvania House of Representatives Summer Lee announced her run for U.S. Congress with a powerful video highlighting the anger and betrayal industry has wrought in southwestern Pennsylvania. Representative Lee picked up the endorsement, the future mayor of Pittsburgh, Representative and the future mayor of Pittsburgh, Ed Gainey's endorsement for the seat of the first day. Sorry, Sean just put that in before the show and I hadn't pre-read it. My bad. Sorry, I apologize. And it's been over 300 days since a full-time and part-time professors at Harrisburg Area Community College completed their card signing process and filled their petitions for a union vote. The school is the only community college in Pennsylvania without a union, without union representation, and PA Spotlight is going to be getting ready to peel back the layers of Dr. Ski's anti-union past. Buckle up. And University of Pittsburgh faculty voted overwhelmingly to unionize this week. Fantastic. And Kutztown University, my little place of work, saw a flurry of progressive action this week. On Tuesday, the student group KU Activists protested the university's denial of ADA accommodations to at-risk students and faculty, and President Hawkinson's overall magical thinking regard to COVID protocols. Yep, that was a good action. And then on Thursday, KU dining hall workers went public with their union organizing campaign, holding rallies outside several university dining halls throughout the day. And they are, I believe, The only dining hall workers in the entire state system of Pennsylvania, I can't talk today, without a union. So it's about time. Sat there with the chance of, like, you know, if, what do you want, union? What do you want? When do you want it now? If they don't get it, shut it down. So glad to see that. It was great to be out there with folks, kind of supporting that campaign. At today's last call, yeah, we'll just kind of let you know what's going on here. We're going to have a little bit of a short show, abbreviated show today, probably. Want to remind you to tune to the Rick Smith Show, streaming every night on YouTube, Twitter, and wherever you get your stream content. You can also check out all his shows on freespeechtv.org, his shows on WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, and make sure you subscribe to his daily podcast. You can get all that information at thericksmithshow.com. Now, if you haven't already, you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. The amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind that podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. And make sure you're following them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter. And attention, all you gamers out there, the Game Inn, that's with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s, latest consoles, video games, platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you name it. Check them out at their Facebook page, at the Game Inn Facebook page. Follow them on Twitter at the Game Inn, that's with two N's. And if you're looking for something special you can't quite find, shoot them an email at thegameinnpa@gmail.com. That's thegameinnpa@gmail.com. And a special shout out, as always, goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongOfDayMan. That's @SongOfDayMan on Twitter. And this week, coming up on Mondays Out the Coop Live, we're going to have an open phone. There's a lot of stuff I want to be talking about that we haven't had a chance to cover on the shows throughout the week. So we'll be talking about that. Hopefully, we're going to get some calls in from some of the activists who have been doing some work on the ground, like at Kutztown University and around the state. And we've got getting ready for a really great November. We're already kicking out with some great guests. We're going to have Kirsten Zolfel back on the show to talk about the PA first and what's happened with the Brian Fitzpatrick. And Brian Fitzpatrick's making some more moves this week to try to show himself to be a moderate. And then we're also going to have Laura Putnam on the show in November. And she is a professor of history at University of Pittsburgh. And she's going to be coming on talking about, you know, looking at the kind of rise of some really, you know, progressive politics in the Pittsburgh area, out of Western PA, as well as kind of looking at some of the recent pieces that she's had about what actually happened in terms of progressive politics in the Midwest and the Rust Belt. So I'm really looking forward to talking to her. Want to remind you, look, that if you need progressive future, if you want a progressive future, you need a progressive, I think we need it, right? Well, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. And I can tell you right now, our Patreon is going to start getting a little bit more active because I got some questions for patrons about directions for Raging Chicken going forward. Want some ideas about building up some power here in Bucks County in the PA first. And that's going to be a conversation that's going to be taking place on our Patreon page. One little bonus is to be part of that conversation about going forward about building progressive media in Bucks County. So head on over there. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Again, it's patreon.com/rcpress. Help keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month because going patreon.com/rcpress today. Well, Sean, man, how you doing?
I think I'm doing good. I can't tell if I have a hangover or Havana syndrome right now, but you know,
it's Havana going. Syndrome. It's that bad.
Yes, Havana syndrome.
Are you looking at the top of the like the houses across the street for like microwave radiation? Like,
yeah, I think there's like a satellite. Yeah, exactly. Just pointing. But
so was that kind of night last night, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I ended up at Sturgis and Midtown. My haunts.
There you go. Well,
I had a good cappuccino this morning too. So at least I got to start on the right foot.
Well, there you
go. From Elementary Coffee. So
There you go. Shout out right there.
Yep. The best coffee shop. One of the best coffee shops in Harrisburg.
There you go, man. Elementary coffee shout out. There you go. So, folks, we're gonna switch things up a little bit today. Sean's got a place to go to get out of here. I actually have a place I've got to go this afternoon too as well. My daughter's got a kind of event at school that I got to get out of here soon. But we I'll tell you, at the national level, I really only want to talk, really kind of have some comments to make about what's happening with the Build Back Better plan. But we're going to flip that around a little bit, and we want to get to some of the stuff in PA, because there's a lot of stuff kind of going on right now. And because we want to tease that out first, and then we'll come back and talk about the Build Back Better. We'll keep it kind of maybe a two-segment show today. So for those of you who are already joined in, thanks for joining in. I appreciate it. We'll take your comments throughout the show too as well.
All right. Yeah. So I guess just one quick start, explain what's happening, why I'm leaving, getting out early. So at 1 o'clock this afternoon, the Commonwealth Court is going to be taking up the Commonwealth versus Senate Republicans over their plan to subpoena the personal records for 9 million voters in Pennsylvania. The oral arguments are happening today. So for those who don't realize, a bunch of people, especially in Bucks County, have joined on to the case. Also, a lot of organizations like Common Cause, the ACLU, the coalitions that beat down the voter ID bill in front of the PA Supreme Court are testifying today about this. And, you know, we didn't really get a chance to talk about this on the show, right. But one of the emails that we uncovered through Spotlight is featured in Shapiro's lawsuit to shut this down. And it's the email of Stuart Ulsh basically asking Mastriano and Kim Ward, who are both members of this committee that filed these subpoenas or voted on these subpoenas, to do whatever they can to overturn the 2020 election. That email was sent literally just days after the election was called. That following Monday, that email was sent, and it was purely for political reasons. It's definitely like an issue, probably like one of the biggest court cases going on in the country right now. And, you know, I just want to get pictures of people going in, photos and videos of people going in and stuff like that. So definitely want to, that's why I'm leaving early. So
yeah, it's going to be a big, It's going to be a big day. And I think a historic one too, as well. I mean, like you said, this is a huge case, and it's going to have, either way, it's going to have potential. It's going to have impacts, right, on kind of the future of politics. So cool. And, you know, the good thing is, too, is that we all get to be treated to some of Sean's wonderful pictures, hopefully, like down the road.
Maybe.
I hope so.
So that's probably why I'm ducking out early. But yeah, that's going on today, this afternoon at 1 o'clock. And it should be interesting. I don't know if I'm going to go in, if I'm going to be allowed to go in with having my bag with me and all, but I definitely want to get footage of people going in and out. So
fantastic. So let's get, since we're kind of talking about all the things that are going on today, it's like a new story just kind of broke about Doug Mastriano, right? This is kind of, I don't know if we can consider this like a pre-launch, like a campaign launch story or what?
Yeah, so he's asking God for a financial sign. He's waiting for a financial sign from God to run for governor. You know, like, this is just a shit show. I guess we're just living in like an alternate reality right now. Like, this is not normal. Like, you know what I mean? Just like, oh God, yeah.
So here's the story in the Philadelphia Inquirer, just the subheading for this, right? So, well, I'll read the heading and that subheading. It's too perfect. It says, Doug Mastriano is waiting on a financial sign from God about running for governor. Subheading, the state senator and his wife, Rebbe, told a Bradford County church that they have issued a monetary fleece before God, seeking a financial sign that he should run for governor. It's like incredible.
This is like this is like what evangelical prosperity gospel bullshit on steroids, going running for office like the prosperity.
Holy crap! And you say
it's also, I think this article points out that Mastriano has a really big hard on for Jake Corman at the moment, who neutered him, who took away his spotlight, his toys. with the audit and kicked them out of caucus. Like literally the other day, a friend was telling me that Mastriano was doing one of his Facebook Lives outside of my fucking apartment because he was just walking around on the riverfront with nothing to do. And I wish they would have told me because I would have got my camera and I would have gone out and started throwing questions out there at him. But yeah, I mean, he's just like a little lost puppy right now. But like, yeah, he's looking for a sign from financial sign from God, you know, in case like some sugar daddy, billionaire sugar daddy comes in and gives him some money.
Well, I just can't resist to read just like a little bit of this the piece from the Philadelphia Inquirer, right? So here it is. Mastriano and his wife said they are praying about a campaign, according to a recording of the event obtained by Clout. She told the crowd the couple have a monetary fleece out there, meaning a prayer that only God can answer. The couple have done this before. They issued a fleece before he entered politics in 2019, and God kept them waiting until the day before their deadline, she said. Sometimes he does wait until the last minute, she said. Well, while they wait, Mastriano showed no hesitation in attacking the primary competition. He mocked U.S. Representative, former U.S. Representative Lou Barletta of Hazleton, who released a poll this month showing him as the early favorite for the Republican nomination. That was a rigged poll, said Mastriano, offering as proof his own poll, showing himself as the guy, the top guy in Pennsylvania. You got to love it.
I mean, I will give Mastriano some credit. The poll that like this came from is Susquehanna Polling and Research, which they really don't have a really good track record of polls. It's probably like one of the shittiest polls like in the state. It ain't no Franklin and Marshall. Let's just leave it at that.
Right. Well, I'm sure like Mastriano, of course, used Franklin and Marshall to do his polling, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He was probably up at the
Terry Madonna. Bringing Terry Madonna out of retirement.
Yeah, he was probably up at that like Iron Rod convention thing getting his polling done.
Zach was at that.
The yes, Iron he Rod was. Convention. Yes, he was.
Zach. So the funny thing about that, Zach messaged me the day before. He's like, hey, do you want to come to this? I'm just like, this is a joke, right? And it wasn't. And just like seeing the stuff. I mean, I've seen the moons up close and personal a bunch of times over the years.
Been don't there, really done that.
Yeah, I really don't want to go into their backyard.
Yep.
At that point, but yeah, so.
But you missed out on all the kind of like, you know, the after ceremony firing range with the AR-15s and stuff, Sean.
I'll tell you one thing. If I went there to that, I would have fired off an AR-15. I would have asked. Like, I mean, like I fired the largest gun I've ever fired was a 22. So, you know, I had to get that credit somehow.
Yeah, that's different.
And that
yeah.
was always in scouts. Yeah. You know, it didn't have a recoil to it, you know.
Yeah, the largest one I've ever shot was an AK-47. So.
Were you wearing like were you dressed up as like an IRA member at the point?
No. I was actually
with your Adidas overalls. And
No. We were in the basement of the apartment that we were renting.
Oh God!
I kid you not. I'll tell that story off air.
But yeah,
no one was hurt. Please be clear. Don't take that the wrong way. Yeah, that's that was a moment of stupidity. But anyways,
I think I'll wait for that story.
and for the record, it was not my idea. Just to be clear. Anyways, so there you go, Mastriano. But the big news I think this week, right? The kind of news that I think bolstered all our boats, right? This week was the announcement from Summer Lee.
Yes. So like the news came out, trickled out the day that Mike Doyle announced his resignation, like hours beforehand. Summer Lee filed her paperwork for her websites and all that. So like there's that like Twitter account that tracks all government, tracks like all the website domains for people who are running for Congress with FEC filings. And Summer Lee popped up, and then like Bethany Hollum, the Summer's big time promoter on TV. I don't even know the Yeah, the promoter, her promoter, Bethany Hollum, is getting everyone to donate to Summer. I mean, and it's also like it brings me back to first, the video was awesome that she released.
Oh, it was incredible.
I mean, it brings in that anger. Like, I mean, when she pretty much like F you to U.S. Steel and said like, you know, like basically like the Braddock that she always heard about is a fairy tale.
Right.
And it gives the narrative that the Braddock that like Fetterman talks about is a fairy tale. a bit. Like, you know what I mean? Now, Fetterman does point out the things with Braddock in his, you know, campaign videos, and did a really good job, I think, with his Senate run and his lieutenant governor run, like highlighting those issues.
I agree.
But like, it's a different narrative with Summer. And basically saying like the Braddock that everyone's talking about is the Braddock we never knew about, because that Braddock died in the 1950s and 60s.
Yep. And I mean, it left us behind and poisoned our water, poisoned our air, right? And left
broke
us,
the unions.
Broke the unions, like, and then blamed us for it.
Yeah, which is like that right there is the most powerful line. You destroyed our communities and then you blamed us for it.
Yep.
I thought that was an awesome line. I mean, and it reminds me of like growing up in the Juniata Kensington part of Philadelphia, like Kensington, Fishtown, like that part of the River Wards in Philly used to be like the textile capitals of the country.
Yep. That's right.
You know, my dad used to have the warehouse job, and it reminds me of like that. Like, you are the people. Industry is the one who destroyed this area, not yep. like us. And you know, they got the blame for it. And then, you know, secondly, it reminds me of like the interview we did with Summer. I did with Summer at the PA Progressive Summit.
Yeah, it was
a few years
Summer
ago with Sarah yep. and Elizabeth Fiedler.
Yep.
You know, like, you can tell that they weren't messing around at that point. And like the you know, it was amazing. Still, like, that interview is amazing. Definitely recommend listening to it. But also, like, the way people were talking about in Harrisburg. And when you tell, like, I remember months before the primary, I told them, like, listen, all three of these Democrats are going to win. And I had House Dems getting mad at me for saying
that. I remember like, that. Telling, yep.
Because, like, they had to sink money defending the incumbents, and they lost.
Yep.
And they got blown out. Not that they lost. They got smoked. And like, I pretty much like, I told you so.
Yeah. Like, and we should be clear, like exactly what you said too, is like, it wasn't that they just lost, but they got smoked. I mean, I think that was, and I think.
And then you had AOC getting like weeks after
exactly,
that. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, no, they got smoked in these elections. And no, I mean like Summer Lee strikes the fear of God in the people, like no pun intended, like, but like people are afraid of her. I mean, like it, you know, you see what they did the last time around. They ran literally a jar of mayo against her, thinking that they were going to win.
Exactly. I don't even think it was mayo. I mean, I think it was more like Miracle Whip, to be honest with you.
But I mean, like that's like what they were doing, like, and then how the party reacted to her. I know it's going to be interesting to see how she does with this. She already picked up the endorsements of the Justice Dems. There's already talk of like Connor Lamb trying to pivot, maybe try running for both at the same time in that House district. And like,
oh, God.
Yeah, no, get ready, people, because the Democratic Party will do everything they can to stop her from getting the seat.
Which is astounding. Which is astounding.
I mean, it's also. I think like this also draws like parallels to, you know, like the India Walton thing that happened in this week, the whole entire story of like, you know, like stopping powerful Black women from getting into office. Like, like the fact that you had the one guy comparing her election to like David Duke getting elected.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And still,
We should say too, the one guy, right, who did that. Tell everybody who did that.
The head of the state party, who was a huge
Cuomo
defender.
The Democratic Party, right? So let's be clear, right? So it wasn't just some rando that was saying this. This is what the Democratic Party came, you know, this is what they were saying.
And it forced Schumer to, it forced Schumer's hand. He was one of the only few holdouts in the state party head, and the governor, current governor, the only two who haven't endorsed. And it forced Schumer to endorse. But I mean, getting back on track with Summer, she picked up Ed Gainey's endorsement on the first day, which is awesome. She picked up Justice Democrat's endorsement on the first day. She's going to have an interesting race. And we'll say her camp, the person she's running against now, seems to be a very progressive civil rights professor, civil rights attorney. Jerry Dickinson's his name, man of color. He had a lot of support in 2020. And I mean, like, if he's the moderate in this right now, I think that shows the future, a good sign of like where politics is going in Allegheny County and Southwestern PA.
I agree 100%. And I think, I mean, we talked a little bit about this on the phone this week. And I think that, you know, I had no reference point for who that guy was. And Sean kind of shot me the videos, like the launch videos and stuff. And like, you know, in a completely blank slate, right? If this guy had emerged as a candidate, right? As a candidate to run, there was no other kind of Democrat running. I mean, I think progressives would look at this guy and be like, oh, this is pretty interesting, right? Came out initially for like Green New Deal, things like this, you said. But then you compare his launch video with Summer's video and you're like, oh, wait a minute. That guy's now the moderate, right? And not the moderate, but like Summer Lee's well where the all the energy is. I mean, Summer Lee is freaking rocking the house, and I think is going to resonate throughout that region. I'll you know, again, if it's not clear already, I'm all in on Summer Lee, right? 100%. So
yes, I we already gave a Summer.
Yeah, we did.
Bethany has been
day freaking one, right?
Yeah. So I think she raised like close to $100,000 this week so far, just from small dollar donations. So I mean, yeah, it shows you the power of having a good having that stuff lined up. So
absolutely fantastic. So that was a huge news this week. So what else are we going on? You've got a little thing happening out at Hack, I understand.
Yes, this is a story we're gonna have coming up in PA Spotlight probably later on today. It has been 300 days since the union there has, or the PS, it's been 300 days since PSEA and HAC, the professors of the HAC, have filed their petition to have a union vote. They have not had a union vote. The president of this union is Dr. Ski. Don't know how to say his, cannot pronounce his real name, but he goes by Ski personally. You know, in the area.
Wait, not the president of the union, president of the university, president of the
president
college.
Of the university. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Dr. Ski has a long track record of attacking union workers, he has a long track record of trying of going after unions, union drives at the universities he's been at. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in HAC with this. HAC is the only community college in Pennsylvania. Right now, or with Erie, I'm not sure, but one of the only ones in the state that does not have union representation. And the Hawk Faculty United is trying to change that. They've been at it for months now. And yeah, it'll just be interesting to see like how everything goes.
Yeah,
and we're trying to use our platform to help their cause.
Well, and indeed, I mean, like, you know, I mean, yes, 100%. And especially when you've got kind of like a dude that calls himself Dr. Ski, right, serving as the kind of anti-union head, kind of like a Dick Dastardly character kind of up there. So there you go.
Now, let's just say he has a lot of like social capital within liberal circles.
Right.
And Democratic and political circles up here. And, you know. You know, we'll see how the social capital holds up after this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, we can see like another positive example there, too, as well. University of Pittsburgh faculty voted overwhelmingly to unionize this week. That's congratulations to everybody out there who's been working on that campaign. I know Robin has done kind of, you know, is one of the organizers who's been working with the United Steelworkers out there for years. Robin's an awesome organizer, and again, I don't want to kind of like, you know, say just Robin. Obviously, the faculty who organized to kind of bring that union to fruition, the voting for the faculty is there. So now what we need is kind of all support behind them, get them their first contract, and you know, kind of increase that union density in higher education at least. So there we go. They're pretty cool. Pretty cool. And the other thing I want to mention too, as well, at Kutztown University this week, I want to give a really huge shout out to the student activists with KU Activists. They had a fantastic rally on Tuesday, basically again about the lack of you know, proper protocols when it comes to coronavirus, the denial of ADA accommodations to students with disabilities, students who had kind of significant health risk when it came to COVID, and refusing accommodations. They've been at a really active campaign on Instagram, which have been posting student stories about students basically you know, choosing, you know, asking for accommodations because they're worried about coming back for COVID and they have some sort of disability. And you have basically administrators or, you know, or folks within the university say, well, you know, maybe you need to consider going elsewhere, or maybe you need to take some time off and come back when you can, you know, just like no kind of empathy at all and no kind of willingness to work with that. And of course, Steve Oros, who we've had on this show, we've been telling his story, guy with had the heart transplant, who was denied ADA accommodation. Steve Oros was there and he spoke and told his story too as well. 69 News out of Allentown had a good story. They're covering it. It was fantastic. And so if that wasn't enough, right, KU Activists held that rally on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, KU Activists joined union organizers and dining hall workers who are forming a union at Kutztown University because the student, you know, those students have been working with organizers and with the dining hall workers to help unionize Kutztown University dining hall workers. They have been active in this campaign for a while now, and they just went public on Tuesday. I got to be at that rally. It was fantastic to see that kind of come to fruition. And again, now it's going to be about moving forward and asking for union recognition. God, I can't speak today. And then getting that union and getting that contract. So it's only going to need more support from the community, from students, from faculty, in order to get behind. Those workers. I just want to give a shout out to Emily and to Shireen and to Fred. How are you doing out there? Kind of following on the chat. It was a good day. And I have to say, it's like one of the things that that I would have liked to see even more of is even more folks out there each day. But there was good crowds both days. So kudos to KU Activists for doing that bang up work. Kudos to the dining hall workers who are kind of moving forward and went public with their unionization campaign. It's only promising to get better going forward. So pretty cool. Pretty cool. Anyways, anything else going on in PA that you want to throw in, Sean?
Nothing too much. Don't really know what's going to be happening next week. Maybe within a couple weeks, in the middle of November, definitely keep your eyes open. There's going to be an important lawsuit from the Public Interest Legal Center and, I think the Education Law Center or something like that. I've just butchered the names, but the fair funding lawsuit is going to be going in front of Commonwealth Court in November. There's going to be a lot of actions around it, and it's going to take weeks, this trial. It's a very important trial that, you know, parents and community members are suing the legislature over the inadequate funding formula here in Pennsylvania for public education. So this is going to be very important. There's going to be a ton of actions around this lawsuit coming up. It's going to be in November, and it's going to be lasting a month or two. So
pretty cool. Well, you know, and again, I want to give an additional reminder to everybody to make sure you get your ballots in for November 2nd's election. If you have mail-in ballots, you need to drop them off. I would not recommend trying to put anything in the mail at this point. Get to your drop-off box. If you're in Bucks County, the thing that you should know, Bucks County has drop boxes at all the public libraries, right? You can just make sure, look at Bucks County drop boxes, voting drop boxes, ballot drop boxes. And they'll give you a list of exactly where they are. I'm not sure if it's every single library. I'm pretty sure it is, but definitely check that out. I know there's one in my town. So make sure you get your ballots in and make sure that we get these school board candidates elected from the Pennridge United, from the candidates we've had on this show, from Palisades. I understand. I just got in touch with it. We'll see if we can get these folks on. I don't know if we're going to have enough time before the election, but apparently there's a fairly contested race that's going on up there in Quakertown too as well. So someone just reached out to me a couple days ago that we're trying to see what's actually happening, trying to understand what's happening in the Quakertown school board. We know that there's been all sorts of kind of union issues that have been taking place there with staff workers and things in the past. So we'll see what we can bring forward there. So vote. I know at Kutztown area, right, they got Steve Schnell, who's running for school board out there. They're facing their own kind of right-wing craziness with a lot of this, keeping kids in school pack, dark money groups kind of dropping all, like, you know, thousands of dollars into that race. So look, there's a lot at stake right now. So make sure that you're getting out there and voting on November 2nd. If you don't already have a mail-in ballot, if you have a mail-in ballot, make sure that you get to that drop box and register your vote now more than ever. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break. And after the break, we're just going to talk a little bit about this Build Back Better stuff. Sean is probably going to take off. But if he is here, great. If he wants to have any, chime in on that. But we'll kind of keep it short after the break and talk a little bit about where we're going from here and some plans going forward. But for now, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Want to remind you, you can help support this show. You can help support all our shows by going to patreon.com/rcpress, and you can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Thank you to everyone who supported this show right from the beginning. Thank you to everyone who's actually been, you know, like, you know, chipping in and become a member and become a patron. I can't tell you how important that is and how great it's been. It's allowed us to expand from a single podcast once a week that Sean and I have been doing into three shows a week. We've got great guests that are coming on. Like I said, that an Out to Coop Live this Monday, we're going to have a call-in show. It's going to be kind of an open phones, open comment show. Because I'm really, really curious about what's happening out there for everybody. There's a lot to track right now, and especially here in Pennsylvania. I've been watching what's been happening at these unionization campaigns, which I've been thrilled about. Also what's happening in school boards, also what's happening with student activism. There's a lot going on, so I'd love to hear from folks. If you're listening to me right now, be here on Monday at 7 p.m You can just join us right here on our YouTube page. You can also follow us and kind of join in and call in on riverside.fm, and there'll be details of that in the show notes for that show. And also, like I mentioned earlier, that we've got some great shows coming up in November. We're gonna have Kirsten Zolfel back on the show, talk about what's going on in the PA first with the races of Brian Fitzpatrick. And then we're also going to have, I was thrilled, just nailed this down before the show today. We have Laura Putnam will be on in a couple of weeks in November. And Laura Putnam's a history professor out at University of Pittsburgh, and she does great work on kind of tracking social movements and in particular with what's happening in the kind of the Allegheny County, the kind of the areas surrounding Pittsburgh, and this kind of leftward turn that's happening there in the politics. And we're going to be talking about one of her recent articles in the journal Democracy and some of the kind of post-election results about what actually take place. So we'll have her coming in kind of after we know the results of the elections from November 2nd. And we'll kind of get a lay of the land of where things stand at this point in kind of Western Pennsylvania and the state of Pennsylvania as a whole. So those are just two examples. We've got some other great content coming for you. And like I said, for those of you who are our patrons or are thinking about becoming a patron, we're going to have starting to lively up the Patreon site for patrons only. And we're going to be talking a little about directions to go forward about building kind of capacity in, building power, organizational capacity, media capacity within Bucks County and the kind of surrounding counties. And I want, you know, people help support this show. I want to hear from you, right? I want to hear some of your ideas. I want to bounce some ideas back and forth with you about some of the things I've been thinking about and what it's going to take in order to do that and your ideas for how to make that happen. But that'll all be coming up. But you can be part of that conversation too as well by going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to be right back after this quick break, and we're going to talk a little bit about the craziness happening in DC. We'll talk to you in a minute.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day that the bank robber known as Pretty Boy Floyd was gunned down by federal agents in Ohio. He was born Charles Arthur Floyd in 1904 in Georgia. His family moved to Oklahoma when he was a boy. Like many Oklahomans during this era, he fell on hard economic times. Floyd turned to crime. He did a four-year stretch in a Missouri prison for payroll robbery. When he got out, he tried to get a job in the Oklahoma oil fields. Unable to find work, Floyd took up bank robbing. He robbed banks in Kentucky, Ohio, and Missouri. He got caught and convicted in Ohio, but escaped on his train trip to prison. He made his way back to Oklahoma. There he became a folk hero. Locals called him the Robin Hood of the Cookson Hills. Legend had it that Floyd destroyed mortgage papers when he robbed banks, winning him friends among farmers reeling from the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl. Floyd became a national fugitive when he was accused of killing federal agents in Kansas City. He denied he was ever involved in the killings. J. Edgar Hoover, head of the U.S. Bureau of Investigation, named Floyd public enemy number one. Finally, the law caught up with Floyd in an Ohio cornfield. His body was returned to Oklahoma, where as many as 40,000 came to his funeral. Woody Guthrie remembered Floyd in song.
But a many a starving farmer, the same old story told. How the outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little home.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Others tell you about a stranger that come to beg a meal. Underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill.
Welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Look who's still here. Up this way. He's over here. Look, he's still here. Sean's still here. How about that? We're kind of blowing it through pretty quickly. So Emily said in a comment that her daughter, who was in a non-union crew job at a community theater, just gave her notice because of her lousy working conditions. There you go. Right. Exactly.
It was actually pretty funny. So, bar story from last night. I was talking to, ended up striking up a conversation with someone who was living out here. I'm thinking a Latina woman. She's an iron worker from Chicago. And she's out here working on the federal building, the new courthouse that's going in here in Harrisburg. And we had some like really good conversations about like, a really good two hour long conversation about like, why she joined a union. Mm-hmm. She was working like the corporate world and, you know, made a career shift into like, you know, the building trades and the iron workers. And I thought it was like a really interesting story hearing, you know, a woman of color doing that and going through that. One, I think it's freaking awesome. And two, it's just like hearing, you know, talking about like what people have had, like, you know, shared my story with that, like my dad's union getting broken. And it's just like, people don't realize that until the union's gone.
Right.
Like, you know, and the benefits and stuff like that. And, or like, you know, or people have a shitty working condition and they join a union and then they see like what they were missing out on.
Well, exactly. You know, I think this is a great example that you're citing there, as you know, why it's so important, why you hear Sean and I always talk about the importance of organizing, right? Organizing within existing unions, right? Now, it's not okay to just kind of get your union and then go off kind of like in kind of a business unionism one and then forget your members. It becomes absolutely important to kind of engage your members all the time, precisely because I think it's just natural. Like if you're kind of coming, you weren't part of a struggle, you weren't part of the process of getting a union, right? It's very easy to take it for granted or not realize what you're, you know, kind of what you're actually getting until you lose it. Right. And it's much easier to like to keep a union than it is to kind of get one back. Right. So, that's critical.
Also reading some of the reactions by like economic professors at Pitt, mm-hmm. I got blocked by a few of them. I just call them scabs on Twitter, but it's amazing just like seeing like, oh, they're only doing it for the money. And just like, obviously they're like, whoa, now we're going to get paid less. No, you're not going to get paid less. Like, and it's also like, no, it's not about having a higher pay either. And they're like, we're paid well enough. I'm like, no, that's not the point of a union. Like, your point of your union is not to get paid enough. It's to have representation.
And over your working conditions, the condition of your job, the health and safety, all this. But here, a lot of times when you get that stuff, we face this at Kutztown too as well, right? As a unionized faculty, is that usually when you get those kind of comments, usually what is motivating that is like, oh no, Everyone's going to get paid.
I got mine.
Everyone's going to get paid fairly now, and I'm not going to be the one who's special, right? As I'm not going to be the one who gets to lord it over and kind of feel like I'm the king, right? Kingmaker here, because other people are going to get treated fairly, right? I mean, that's really what's at the core of it right there. So,
yeah.
So. Anyways, Emily also says that five people left that theater company within a three-week period because of the working conditions. Yep, there you go. That's happened all over the place. I've told the story on the show. I've had students tell me the stories of who worked in service sector, worked in a bunch of other jobs, and then when COVID hit and they're getting treated like crap, they're like, why am I doing this? Right?
Yeah, I mean, like that. Like when I left my previous job at the brewery, Pizza Boy, like I told myself, I'm not going to rehash that story, but I told myself, like, I am never going back to this because of how bad, like, the service sector jobs are, like, working in the restaurant industry. And it's, like, it's not a surprise that, like, the restaurant industry is struggling right now because it's, like, been a really, like, horrible industry to people for decades. COVID hit, the industry pretty much collapsed, and now no one wants to go back to work in it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, if you had to deal with that abuse or toxic work environments for years, and that's like your source of income, and you're just fed up with it, COVID pandemic was a good excuse to like never go back. I guarantee there's a lot of people who are just like, fuck this shit, never going back into like these jobs again.
Well, that's what it is. It's just, you know, again, this is what the story I heard from my students. Like, again, it was remarkable to hear this conversation kind of come out like naturally, like it was stuff that they were writing about in their own writing, and they're kind of like suddenly they start talking about some of this stuff. And I'm like, whoa, I mean, I didn't see this coming. But it was also that idea that, wait a minute, once I have a break, once I can get like detach from the churn, right, of like the day to day of kind of, okay, I just got to do this. And you have a moment to stop and reflect and realize you're treated like crap. Right. Then suddenly you're changing your standards. You know what I mean?
And there's another thing we talked about. Oh, go ahead.
No, and I talked about this is like what it means to break a cycle of abuse. Right. It's a cycle of abuse, like of working condition abuse. Right. I mean, and it's like once you start realizing that, look, wait a minute, you've been mistreated. Right. And then it's hard once you realize that to say, I'm going to go back into that environment. No, let me look for someplace else. Let me look for another way to kind of like live my life in such a way that I'm not going to be mistreated and abused on my job. And I think that was a wake up call, especially for kind of like younger folks who are kind of like, have not been so kind of like Stockholm syndromed into the kind of, there's no better world out there other than the one that is kind of like, you know, coming down on my shoulders. So
yeah, and it's also another thing we talked about with this woman. She's just like, most people realize their jobs were crap, like for all this stuff time. And it's just like, how do you, like, you know what I mean?
Yep, exactly. And so, okay, so this is part of the context. You know, one of the things that I have to say I was pretty hopeful about, and like I said, I want to talk just a little bit about the context for the Build Back Better stuff. You know, in part because it's happening nationally. I can't tell you, it's like, this is the kind of stuff that I've literally had to walk away from kind of following the day by day of what's going on in DC around this bill, because it's been making me sick. Right. It's been literally making me sick because everything, like literally the quality of our future rides on this stuff getting passed, especially when it comes to climate legislation. Right. This is it. Right. In order to make the necessary turn in our economy away from the kind of like the shoveling upwards to like the people who freaking don't need it, right? To actually changing the direction of our economy, to make it a more caring economy, to make it one that's actually going to get people what they need. That's all being sold down the river right now. And I look at this like, you know, again, from the perspective, obviously, of someone who's involved politically, but also as a parent. And that freaking man, Joe Manchin, and Kyrsten Sinema, they're hurting my kids right now. They're hurting you. They're hurting me, right? And this shows you how freaking corrupted that process is up there. It shows you how, like, anti-democratic the Senate is. It shows you how, like, anti-democratic the filibuster is. It shows you the kind of corruption and the rot at the core of these freaking corporate Democrats. right? And what's worse about this, right, is that if this, first of all, if this Build Back Better doesn't go through, which it does, which it looks like it's going to go through, and it's going to be like a bad bill for everybody, there'll be some good things in it, right? But it's not going to be sufficient. It's not going to give us what we need in terms of the climate. And if you think that they're going to pass climate legislation separately with this Congress, you're freaking, like, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid big time.
Yeah. Right. I know. And also, I feel like with this and the fuck ups that are happening with the Democratic Party, you know, there's a whole bunch of things on top of this. One, you see the support of colored people and white people pretty much plummet with the Democratic Party, with their base. You have a party that's more interested in organizing the suburbs and not organizing the black and brown people who are the voting base, the new American majority, pretty much. That is the majority of the Democratic Party. No, we're placating to these suburban moderates, which, you know, this white suburban moderate that they think we're driving the party, but when it's not them. You know, we are completely ignoring the millennials who got Obama elected, who, you know, and Gen Z who got Biden elected, you know, yep. Who pushed these people over the finish line. You know, we're ignoring my generation and generation before us in this. And then you have like people like Glenn Youngkin, who is now tied with Terry McAuliffe in a governor's race. That should be a slam fucking dunk.
Yep.
Like, and you have that. And then you have the Democratic Party's refusal to even acknowledge that the school board races around the country is where like all the organizing energy is at for the Republican Party. And it's spelling disaster. And these same people who blame progressives and defund the police last year are going to blame progressives in 2021 and 2022 for like their own undoing.
Yep. 100%.
Like you want us to come out and vote and deliver when like you made these promises and just pushed them aside. Well, like, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
This is the
point that Will Bunch made in his column, right? I mean, this is the point. Will Bunch's column, you got to check this one out. I got the link in the show notes today. I mean, once we kind of publish it, it's not right there in the chat right now, but it will be in the show notes today. It was most ladies' piece, From College to Climate, Democrats are sealing their doom by selling out younger voters. Let me just read you kind of a short clip from this, right? So he starts out with this profile, this guy, Samuel Weinberg, right, who basically was organizing young politico, right, working thing. Started a meme on Instagram called like "Settle for Biden," yeah, all snarky and things like this, and said like, "Hey, he'll do, right? Whatever." And the whole idea was, you know, instead of walking away, yeah, okay, you know, whatever. We have no illusions about Biden being like this amazing person or something like this. Like, but we'll do it. We're gonna get out there. And this is, and now here's what Will Bunch writes, says, quote, on November 3rd, 2020, voters in the 18 to 29-year-old demographic turned out in higher numbers than past elections, voted strongly for Biden over Trump, and clearly tipped the key electoral college states like Georgia as the Democrats just barely earned control in Washington. But just 9 months into the 46th presidency, Biden is struggling to earn even that C-plus on his first report card from America's young voters. The last week of headlines that free community college is completely dropped from the Democrats' economic plan, and that a Democratic senator has ripped the guts out of its climate strategy, along with a Godot-like wait for major action on student debt, has shaken many teen and 20-something voters who hope for more. Even Weinberg, now a 20-year-old college student in Western Massachusetts, is growing disillusioned. Quote, "It's insulting that we were being given a seat at the table after, or that we're not being given a seat at the table after helping deliver Biden his victory in November," he said about the lack of action affecting people. Quote, "And it's absolutely devastating, honestly, that our future is being neglected to the extent that it is. Young people are going to bear the burden of these policy blunders." Right? There you go. Right? There you go. I mean, and if you think that this guy, right, that Samuel Weinberg is just kind of like a unicorn, it's like one kind of rando out there that's saying this stuff, it's not. No, because young folks were mobilized and organized on this vote, so they understand, right? They're already politicized. And so when they see these political failures, you're basically saying F you to the younger generation, to my kids, to Gen Z. And then you're going to want to come out, them to come out and support you in the midterm elections, in the school board elections, and the next presidential elections? Good luck. this is the biggest thing that Democrats could do to destroy motivation for voting, to basically tell people there's nothing you can do. And that goes one of two ways. People check out.
I mean, it's almost like the time I remember going to the 2016 primary and Bill Clinton was in the fucking Keystone building.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And Bill Clinton blamed millennials who were not even old enough to vote. Like, for the most part, like college students who weren't even around to vote in 2010 for the Democrats losing when the Tea Party uprising happened. And just like, we're seeing the same thing happening, and it's just like, no, well, like back then, well, same thing is happening. You know, I think you and Jordan really talked about this really well, like the parallels between school board races and the Tea Party movement, like, and what's going on with school boards. That's where the energy is at. This is what they're planning on using to win the midterms, critical race theory and stuff like this. This is their ticket. And it's just like, it's nonsense. I'm going to get out of here in a couple seconds, but it's reminiscent to what Clinton said. And when Bill Clinton pretty much just stood up there for a few minutes, just blaming people who couldn't vote for Obama's failures as a leader, or like the Democratic Party's failures in the 2000s and 2010s. Just like, no, you're not offering anything. And now you're just like, you know, it's your job to, you're selling out the planet at this point.
That's exactly it. Exactly it. Well, hey, man, Sean, I know you got to take off. So we're going to say goodbye to Sean. I'll wrap us up here on the show. I'm going to be sticking around. I'm going to say a couple more things about this and the Build Back Better, and then we'll cut it out. But have a blast at the hearing, Sean.
I'll talk to you later.
All right, take it easy. Let me see if I have to change my little let me see if I go like this over here. Oh, God. That's not ideal, but whatever. I had to change my – we have this, like, frame that goes on for our in our show, and now it makes it look a little strange on my YouTube screen. But you know what? I'm going to deal with it and stop talking about it. I want to go back to the Will Bunch piece for a bit, because he closed out this one piece, right? And I think this is a big difference, right? He said, simply put, just toward the end of his article, after he goes through a whole bunch of, you know, kind of statistics and research that was done about kind of how important young voters were for Biden's victory. He says, simply put, under 30 voters handed Biden the Electoral College, which makes it hard to explain why. One, the free community college proposal was the very first thing to get dropped. Right. He said Team Biden had already cut it in half by $45.5 billion over 5 years, and it would have helped 8 million middle class Americans, most of them young people, but they caved under the pressure from Manchin and Sinema. Or that Biden has yet to follow through on a 2020 campaign promise to cancel at least $10,000 per person of America's $1.7 trillion college debt. Let's remember, he doesn't need anybody for that. That is an executive action that all he has to do is sign a freaking order, and that goes away. And he has not done it, right? And he keeps on teasing it out, like, we're waiting for this, we're waiting for that. Like, yeah, the waiting for Godot-like thing that Will Bunch mentions, exactly, right? Or how about the most ambitious programs to tamp down climate change are being taken down by West Virginia's Manchin, who is not only closely tied to the fossil fuel industry, but who receives a hefty annual dividend check from a stake in a coal company, right? So let's be clear about this. Like, we're talking about politics here, right? I'm not talking about perfection. I'm not talking about, like, you know, like ideal world or stuff like this. I'm just talking about, like, the actual work. Oh, there we go. The actual work of politics. Right. And one of those just I'm sorry, I'm getting preoccupied with this, with trying to make my screen not seem so weird for viewers right now. Just give me a second. There we go. But so here's the thing. Yes, it may be true that Joe Biden does not have control over Joe Manchin. Right. So I'm willing to say that. Right. Because so in other words, that we could fight this, right? Biden could come out and fight this and still lose, right? The difference is about the political connection, right? It's about what people see you doing, right? So there's a difference between Joe Biden having these clothes, what he's doing right now. All the reporting is out there. He's like meeting with small groups of people behind the scenes. Like, he's trying to strong arm them into this. Like, he's trying to basically do his version, his fantasy about what the Senate actually is versus, you know, what the Senate is in his mind as opposed to what the Senate actually is, right? Which right now is just freaking an anti-democratic kind of like, you know, institution that is sending us down to a climate hell. That's what it is. But so he's doing all this behind the door scene. Guess what? Guess who sees that? Nobody out here. All those voters who put you in office, all those voters who got it, maybe were kind of like came out because they were saying, we got to freaking stop this Trump guy. We got to put an end to that. And we want a better life on top of that. And you're telling them you're not going to speak to them. You're not going to go campaign around the country real hard. Right. You're not going to kind of like criticize a fellow senator. Right. People see that. And what that looks like to people like me, to young folks across this country, to a lot of folks who kind of came out to put Biden in office, it looks like it doesn't matter, that we're screwed anyways. And Now, look, I don't believe that. I do think it matters that we vote. I do think, but we have to acknowledge that we don't have a 90% voter turnout in this country. So it matters how you communicate and how you organize. If these are turnout elections, right? We're in factions, right? We got two sports teams, right? This the unicorn of this kind of middle of people who go back and forth between them. They are a handful of votes, tiny factions. Where you can get more votes and where you can grow your majorities is in organizing people who have not voted. We've all known this. And young folks, right? And I know that's hard work, but young folks in the last election showed us that they're the ones who are doing it. As a matter of fact, they did it largely on their own. It was because of DSA. It was because of the Women's March. It was because of Indivisible. It was because of grassroots organizations, the Sunrise Movement, Black Lives Matter. That's where the energy came from. And you take all those groups, PA stands up here in Pennsylvania, right? You take all these groups that have been did the hard work of organizing on the ground. A lot of labor unions too as well, did a lot of groundwork on the ground. And then you're walking away from all of them. And you're saying publicly that I'm not going to fight for you. I'm going to say a couple strong words in a random speech someplace, as opposed to a systematic organizing campaign to get this passed. It's disgusting. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous. You understand? It's like, look, let me be absolutely frank with you. I don't care about electing Democrats. I care about electing people that are going to do what we need for the future. Right? So in other words, it's like my identity is not tied to the Democratic Party. Right? I don't vote for Republicans because the Republicans vote for the rich. I don't vote for Republicans because they have shown again and again their, and it's only increasing now, that it is a white identity party that supports white supremacy, right? And unbridled capitalism that is sending us all down into dissolution, right? But I don't like, I'm not a proud Democrat. Why? And I know that's going to rub some people the wrong way, but I'm not, because, right, I will support 100% every Democrat's going to fight for people. But just because you have a D next to your name, no. I'm not going to defend Joe Manchin when he's selling people down there. There was a story that came out in the New York Times this week, right? And you know, about Joe Manchin basically sinking all the climate legislation in this Build Back Better plan, saying, nope, I'm not going to support it. I will not support it if there's these, if it's too hard on fossil fuel companies. Right? And he says, look, this is important for West Virginia because West Virginia is going to hurt West Virginia if coal takes a hit. Well, guess what? There's all these new reports that are coming out, right? They have come out, right? That are looking at the impacts of climate, right? Now, we talked a couple of weeks back. We talked about ways in which flood insurance companies are going to be increasing their premiums, right? They're starting to factor in climate impacts, and they're going to increasing premiums, particularly in kind of flood-prone areas, by about 18, 18% per year for the next 20 years. Think about that. So they know. They know that we're in trouble, right? And before your head, like mine, right? I mean, initially I'm thinking like, oh yeah, rising seas, right? Yeah, of course, people who have houses on the shore are going to have the impact. The surprising thing about the reports, though, was that both in terms of where the flood insurance rates are going to go up and in these recent reports that have come out about the impacts of climate, the worst flooding and climate impacts are going to be taking place in mountainous regions, right, and flood-prone areas that are primarily populated by poor folks, poor people of color, poor white people, farmers, right? Because we've seen this now in kind of southeastern Pennsylvania, these deluges where the kind of like you have these massive fronts stalling out and dumping like 6 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches of rain at a time, right? Because the jet stream has slowed down, right? Things don't pass through in the same way. So, and then you got all this tropical moisture that gets kind of, that rides up the fronts, right, on the East Coast and so on. Well, one of the states that is going to be hit the worst is going to be West Virginia, according to these reports. Yes, that's right. Joe Manchin's West Virginia. So you have a state, which is one of the poorest states, right, where people are living most precarious lives, right? You have this kind of runaway kind of like, you know, there's no taxes and there's like, you know, people like the opioid crisis ripped through that state. And now they're going to be punished from the climate because of the freaking coal industry that Joe Manchin is protecting. And so the only thing that's going to be there to help out people like them in his state is this legislation, which he is preventing from passing. How's that for representation? How's that? And so, look, at this point, there's only so much you're going to be able to do to change Joe Manchin's mind, right? But if we're organizing for power, right? Because look, if you think you're going to, you saw everybody, all of you, you saw what happened, what the Republicans in the Senate and the House did when it came to kind of the insurrection, when it came to like the impeachment, when it became all that stuff. They just freaking lockstep. They don't give a shit. They're not going to change their minds and see some sort of rational. No, this is a power game at this point. And if the goal is to prevent climate disaster, if the goal is to make sure that people have childcare, if the goal is to make sure that our entire caring infrastructure is prepared for like a society that is worth its name going forward, we have to pass this piece of legislation. And Bernie Sanders, when he came out with a number, $6 trillion for this package to actually do what should be done, there was a bargain that was made, right? The compromise, the $3.5 trillion bill was the compromise. And everybody had agreed, supposedly, okay, we'll do that. And there was a deal that was supposedly cut, where Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were like, oh, okay, it's $3.5 trillion. Okay, yes, okay. We'll get this other infrastructure bill, the bipartisan bill that will come through, and then everybody's on board that we're going to pass the $3.5 trillion reconciliation because we recognize it's a big compromise, and then we're going to go ahead and pass the bipartisan one, right? That happened? Nope. Why? Because people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema went back on their word, right? They lied. And we're going to pay the price for them. And right now, Joe Biden needs to freaking be a fighter. He's supposed to be a fighting Joe. Well, let's see it, Joe. It's really, I'm telling you, this stuff has made me sick for the past couple of weeks. Because I just like, I'm tearing my hair out. Just knowing what the impact is going to be if this doesn't get passed. Right? I mean, in 2018... You know, we got like what are coming up next week, end of next week, right? We've got COP26, right? The big climate summit in Scotland, Glasgow. And this is supposed to be the time when we're going to take it seriously. And if the United States enters that meeting having not done anything connected to climate, like freaking John Kerry could say all he wants, the United States is going to lead again. You know what? Everyone else at that table is going to look at this and be like, yeah, really? What happened to your climate legislation? What happened to your commitments? That didn't pass. And now you want me to do it? Who the hell do you think you are to tell me what to do with our climate? Right? This is danger zone right now. It's just driving me crazy. I shouldn't be clapping because it's not funny or it's not interesting or not exciting. It's like devastating. So anyways, that's what I've been paying a lot of attention to at the national level. So, I mean, you know, fingers crossed on the good do. I'm going to put some links in the, you know, once we put this up on YouTube and in the podcast form, I'll put all the links to some articles that I really strongly recommend. David Dayan's piece in the American Prospect this week called What If We Build Back Better? What If Build Back Better Builds Back Worse? And also Will Bunch's piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer. And a piece from the New York Times on the climate impacts in West Virginia and what Joe Manchin is doing in there. So, like, what can I tell you? Call your legislators, right? I mean, I know, you know, here in Pennsylvania, you know, call them, just tell them, right? You know, again, this is like one of these places in, you know, we only have so much impact in the, when it comes to the Senate. Given who we've got as, you know, we've got Toomey on the one side, which is freaking waste. And Casey, of course, is already going to, you know, is going to vote for the Build Back Better one. So I don't know how many impact we have, but it can't hurt. Call your legislators, call your senators, and make sure that they're kind of urging them to pass this Build Back Better bill, and urge them to freaking fight, right? That's all I can say. Anyways, we're not going to do today, last call this week. We're going to go kind of right to close of the show. This is a part, like I said, I've got to get stuff together. My daughter's got an event at school today that my wife and I are going to kind of join there for this afternoon. So I got to get out of here soon today too as well. But I want to give a special shout out to Emily, to Shireen, to Fred. We're checking in the chat today. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you. And thank you for being there all the time. You know, it's I love to hear it. And want to tell everybody once again, remind you at Monday, that would be, where's my calendar? October 25th. At 7 p.m. we'll be out to Coop Live. We're going to have an open phones comment show. So bring your ideas, bring your questions, bring your comments and so on. And want to encourage you once again, for those of you who have supported the show financially, like, thank you. Supported the show by tweeting stuff out. I can't tell you. I mean, like, the crew that has been growing on Twitter and Facebook that have been sharing out our content. Every time we got a show coming up, I mean, you know, I log in the morning at Twitter and there's like, boom, boom, boom. There's like 4, 5, 6, 7 people who've just are kind of tweeting out the content. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That means so much to me. And like I said, we're going to be upping our game on Patreon with some discussions for patrons only. A little bit about some ideas I have kind of about moving forward with Raging Chicken to try to really grow a progressive media presence and kind of organization in kind of Bucks County in the region. And but I need some folks to kind of bounce some ideas back and forth on. And so we might do some patron only kind of Zoom sessions, or I just might put out some kind of ideas and get some comments on it. But you know, I'm really kind of looking at thinking about our possibilities right now, right? And because a lot of that's going on is really exciting. There's amazing organizing that's going on, and we want to be there to kind of like help foster that and amplify it. And making sure that we're getting people on the show that are going to highlight the work that's going on, right? So that we can contribute to, amplify, aggregate kind of the already amazing work that's happening. So thank you all out there. I remind you that you can become a patron for this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a patron for as little as $5 a month. It's like a good beer once a month. Thank you for those of you who are already patrons. And you know, look, if you're out there, if you can afford it, you can afford it to kind of step up and hit us with that $5 a month. Please do become a patron at patreon.com/rcpress today. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. As usual, it's great hearing from everybody. It's great being a part of this community. And you know, I look forward to the fights ahead. And fingers crossed, folks. It's a dire moment. See ya!